Don't let people know whether Bush broke the law or not. You have no right to know. Let me suggest to you something about the torture memos. Whether or not they were effective, you and I can argue about, frankly, scholars will probably argue about for decades. Some people in intelligence say they were, some say they weren't, some say we could have gotten it another way. We probably will never know, because sometimes we started torturing people, and then we didn't find out.
I think we do know, because we have the letter from President Obama's own Director of National Intelligence.
He's got some information,
who said that they were very effective.
And he also said that he didn't know whether we could get the same information without using them. The effectiveness we will disagree on, but on the law, how can we disagree? You're talking about that Democrats don't respect the law? We signed a convention. The convention...
Go! Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch.
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. All across the country and around the world, thank you for joining us today. Glad to have you. Lots to talk about today. We've got a great guest coming up at the bottom of the hour. We've got Dr. Margaret Flowers, one of the people that Max Baucus, Democrat of Montana, had arrested yesterday for speaking out on behalf of single-payer health coverage. Of course, anyone who speaks out in the United States Senate now for single-payer health coverage will be shouted down or arrested, evidently, because people like Max Baucus have no intention of hearing them out, have no intention of passing anything like that, because, well, you know why. I don't have to explain to you. It boils down to money. Not whether or not the government can afford it or not, but whether Max Baucus and people like him can afford it or not. What do I mean? Can they afford to give up the bazillion dollars they get from the banking industry and insurance industry, the money people, for their campaigns? The answer is obviously not. And they will fight against anything like this because they're too well-funded. Too well-funded. Once again, you and I really don't have a say in the matter. And we'll talk about that throughout the program today. What a damn shame. What a shame. Also, before I go any further, I like a good laugh now and then. I like a good laugh every day. Makes me feel good. Go to www.amptons.com/blog. That's amptons.com/blog. I think you'll find that funny. I certainly did. Well, don't do it right now, or you won't be able to watch that and listen to me as well. Well, some of you can multitask, I'm sure. I have a difficult time. But anyway, we will have Dr. Margaret Flowers with us at the bottom of the hour. I look forward to talking to her and finding out exactly what happened yesterday. Interesting that those people were shouted down and escorted out of the hearing chamber yesterday. I see that Dr. Michael Weiner Savage was on NPR this morning and hung up on them because, as you know, on the NPR show in the morning, they do take phone calls, and someone was being not so kind to Dr. Savage, and Dr. Savage hung up on NPR, and the show went right on without a hitch, didn't miss a step. Now he's threatening to sue the United States, the United Kingdom, for defamation of character. How could you possibly defame Michael Weiner Savage's, or Michael Savage Weiner, however you like to put it? You know, Weiner is his real name. Really, I'm not kidding. And he's got some doctorate in some mumbo-jumbo kind of medicine, I'm not sure what, not like a real doctor, but he's got a doctorate degree, they say. I don't know where from. And he's obviously an intelligent guy, and he also knows how to get ratings, and that's probably what this is all about. This will get him more ratings. Things like this usually do. The wild statements that you hear on a Savage or a Glenn Beck or a Limbaugh or a Hannity, that's usually what the aim is, and it does work. That's why you never hear anything really controversial on this show. I don't say anything to get ratings, because I only say the truth, and I only say what I really feel, and I guess maybe it's not outrageous. So maybe we'll have to say something crazy someday. What could I say that was crazy? I don't know. Anyway, I've heard people talking today and yesterday and for the past week or so, talking about how they think that foreclosure help in the Congress and the Employee Free Choice Act and the single-payer health, they think those issues are all dead. And they may be dead, but let me say this. I don't think they're dead until you and I give up on it. I don't care how many dollars these people pour into the United States Congress. If enough of us make enough of a fuss, then I believe that we can get those things passed. If we raise enough hell, if we stay on our Congress critters enough, then we can get some of these passed. We have to let them know that we're listening, we're paying attention to these bills when they're being discussed. We have to let people like Max Baucus know. Anybody that's against the single payer, anybody that's against the Employee Free Choice Act, anybody that's against any foreclosure help, we've got to stay on them every single day. I don't care if you have to write 100 emails a day. Do it. Do it. Those issues are not dead until we say they're dead. I do believe we can have an impact on these votes. Look at what we did to changed the United States Congress this past year. Many people doubted that we could do it. We did it because we donated the money that was necessary, because we got out and voted. We convinced others to do it. We had a united effort. We got out and we got the United States Congress changed. Maybe not quite the way we needed it changed, but we changed it in the right direction. That's certainly the case. So don't think that these issues are passing us by just because a zillion dollars are being spent by lobbyists to beat us with this. We can overcome it if we make these Congress critters know that we're on their asses and that we know what they're doing, and we're going to pay attention to every single thing they do. And that if they don't do what we want and what is best for America, with health care, for example, and the single payer, then we can boot their asses out and get somebody in who will do the voters' bidding. That's what we have to convince them of. And we can do that. And we will do that, right? So I mean it. You start writing your emails, you start calling your Congress critters' offices, and let them know that we're watching exactly what they do every single day. We need to do that. Because the Rush Republicans aren't going to help us at all. The Democrats are going to have to do it, and we're going to have to keep the Democrats doing it. The majority that we have in the House and the Senate, we've got to keep their feet to the fire and not let some of these issues get away. If ever there was a time that we can get health care, decent health care for the American public, now is the time. We have the numbers to do it. And if it takes the nuclear option to blow it up and vote for a simple majority in the United States Senate, then that is what we should do. This issue of health care is far more important than any politics. Far more important than any politics. And we have to make these damn politicians understand that. One only has to look at the comical scene of Arlen Specter this past week to understand that politics rules the day. I mean, here's a guy, I don't want him in the Democratic Party. I've got enough moral standing I don't want him in the Democratic Party. He's not a Democrat or a Republican. He's some SOB that only cares for Arlen Specter. And I'm not saying he's the only one, because as you all know, there are many others that think the same way. All I want to do is keep my ass elected and keep my ass in the United States Senate or the House of Representatives. That is what many of them think. But you see scenes like an Arlen Specter from this weekend, And you understand what it's all about all of a sudden to most of them. You understand it's not about the American people. It's not what's best for the American people, for the voters, for the constituency. It's about what's best for the politician. And it behooves each and every one of you and me to bug their asses day and night and not let go of it. We can win these issues. Do you think politics doesn't rule the day in many cases over and above what's good for America? Take a look at this deal of Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions. He's one of these Klanservatives. I call him Klanservatives. That's exactly what he is. He's going to be the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee for the Republicans. This guy's got a history a mile long of being a racist SOB. Check it out. I don't have time to go into that. Maybe I will tomorrow. Go into the history of Jeff Sessions and understand why I think it's absolutely ludicrous that they would put somebody like Jeff Sessions on the Judiciary Committee. Politics makes me sick in some ways. Just makes me sick. It could be such a noble profession. And with some people it is. I don't want to condemn them all, but it could be such a noble profession. A Mr. Smith goes to Washington story in so many cases. If they would go in and plead the case of the people instead of listening to lobbyists every day. If you want to do something really interesting, you want to learn a lot about politics, take a day. Those of you that live near it or want to take a vacation, go to the House offices or the Hart Senate office building or one of those and go sit in your United States Senator's office for as long as you can before they get suspicious and throw you out, which they won't. If you go in and sit down in your Senator's office and sit there in the reception area, and many of them are very engaging, the people at the desk, sit there and watch the lobbyists come and go. Sit there in the House of Representatives' offices and watch the lobbyists come and go all day long. You'll soon discover who runs what in this country. I've done it. I've not sat there all day, but I've sat in the offices long enough to see exactly what goes on. It's repugnant. And if you think politics isn't just sickening, take a look at what the Republicans are doing right now. Eric Cantor, whom I find just, a slime ball. When it gets down to the point where a guy like Eric Cantor is, third or fourth in command, you know the Republicans are in some deep crap, real deep. Because I wouldn't trust this guy with a bucket of horse manure. I wouldn't trust him. Well, you know, here they are with this help us find a message tour. Now he's recanting some of it after Limbaugh came out and chastised him for having a tour, a listening tour. But when it boils down to it, it's a help us find a message tour. And my question is, if you're sincere, if you're the real deal, why would you have to have somebody help you find a message? If you're representing a political party, shouldn't you stand for something already? Why would you need to be out looking for what your message should be? Shouldn't you already have a message? But no, the Republicans are out looking to establish a new message because their old one is tired and it's worn out. It's non-existent, really, except tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. They're out looking for the secret formula that'll get them elected again. They don't stand for anything, except right now they're the opposite of anything the Democrats want. They don't have a message. So they're out polling and talking to people and trying to find their way politically. Good luck, boys. Really, the party of no is the party of no ideas. That's why they're in the vast minority right now. You got better chance of finding a devout Republican these days than you got a better chance of finding Bigfoot. It's hard to get anybody to claim today that they're a devout Republican. They don't want anything to do with these clowns. They don't want anything to do with Sarah Palin, with a party that was thinking seriously about putting a Sarah Palin up as their representative, as their nominee for the presidency of the United States of America. I can't wait if that's what they want to do. I can't wait. Will I join that, Donnybrook? Oh, you bet. You bet. Sarah Palin. Jeff Sessions. Eric Cantor. And, I'm always fair in this program, Max Baucus. I hate it. Absolutely hate it. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. You know, I have to admit, in talking about this subject about our Democratic people in the Congress, I knew it would happen. I did see it coming, but I hoped it would take longer to kind of coalesce and come together. And in addition to this no Rushpublicans, President Obama is beginning to face opposition from both leading and rank-and-file Democrats on critical issues such as the housing and the global warming and the tax havens and single-payer health. And I think these signs are really ominous, and I did see it coming, and we've been talking about it for a while. And the American people's critical change agenda may really get damaged if we don't stay after this issue. And as usual, the bought and paid for, to varying degrees, the Washington insiders are ignoring the voters and making decisions based on special interest politics. We've got to stand ready to help the president on this. He cannot do it alone. It's the usual cast of characters, while most of them are committee leaders, Baucus being one. There are also some junior members jumping on the debate right now, and almost makes you wonder who's paying their salary. No, eliminating corporate tax loopholes that hurt the middle class has been an issue ever since President Kennedy, all my political life. And I believe President Obama is right to try and tackle that issue, especially considering the fact he campaigned on it, but he's tackling it openly and honestly about these tax havens. And unfortunately, you got your Senate Finance Chairman, Max Baucus, calling for, and the famous quote, further study. Further study. Just a few minutes after the president announced that initiative yesterday. That's the first step in trying to kill something in Washington speak. And the same kinds of responses are coming from Senator Barbara Boxer. I wrote to her about that this morning, as well as Ways and Means Committee Chairman Charlie Rangel. And what's his name, committee member, Crowley from New York. We can't allow their special interest alliances to undermine this president's effort to restructure this tax code to help honest American business. Honest American business. You take a look at who's hiding money offshore, it makes you sick. Eliminating these tax loopholes and shutting down the tax havens is absolutely imperative if we're going to improve fairness in the American tax system. And it's not just taxes. Global warming is also at risk. It's got a great ally in Congressman Waxman from California, who did a wonderful thing after he threw out Michigan Democrat John Dingell earlier this year, taking over the powerful House Energy and Commerce Committee. But Dingell was a close ally of the auto industry, who aimed to water down any global warming legislation because of the money that was backing him. You stop and think about it. It's incredible to think just how many enemies President Obama faces on every issue, some in his own party. I mean, housing and the economy are probably the most complicated. So let's just say that he's got dark forces massing on all fronts. I believe that's true. And change in Washington is never, never easy. He talked about it's difficult to change the course of a huge ship at sea. It takes a long time, and that's the government. Obama's trying to pull off a miracle for us, and we need him to succeed. And I don't think a lot of Americans understand just how broken the system is today. He's trying to repair it, and while making improvements in it. But the man is incredible, and he may need a miracle because the odds are against him. I'll say that right up front. The odds are against many of these things getting through, knowing how Washington works. So I'm asking everybody who understands these critical issues to please, please contact your representatives to give President Obama and his change agenda as much support as absolutely possible. I believe we've got a great man in his President of the United States, a man with a great future, a man that can do a lot of good for the United States of America. So let's make sure that we give him all the help we can. We got him elected. Now let's give him all the help that he needs. I'm going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a minute or two.
My love, darling,
We're going to see right now if we can get our guest on the line. Let's give it a shot here. Again.
Your call has
been forwarded. Your call has been forwarded. Well, I'll just try this one again. You can tell this isn't a big budget show, right? Show on the Hit On Radio Network.
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Flowers.
Hello.
Welcome to the Guy James Show.
Oh, thank you.
It's good to have you on with us this afternoon. I know you've had an interesting last few hours, anyway. You obviously live someplace near Washington, D.C.?
I do. I live in Maryland, the northern part of Maryland. And, yeah, it's actually been quite a few days, I would say.
It isn't every day distinguished doctor ends up in jail for trying to do something good.
This was a brand new experience for me, yes. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going on this rant here on the program about how the single-payer health care issue is not dead as long as the people go and stand up for it and talk to our representatives and our senators and not let it die. And here you were doing just that and end up getting arrested for it.
Right, yeah. But it came to that point. I've been working on health care reform advocacy for a number of years now, and particularly over the last few months, well, since early November, been working particularly hard meeting with members of Congress and working with other organizations and doing call-in days, and it's definitely not dead for the people. The people want a national health system, the majority physicians want it, and the message was just not getting through to Congress. The more that we, you know, kind of communicated with them, the more we found that we were being left off the table, and so that brought us to our action yesterday, which we did reluctantly, but felt was necessary.
Had you spoken with Max Baucus privately about it?
Myself, I have not, but there's a strong group in Montana for single payer that's been communicating with him, and in addition to that, we had faxes and call-in, organized to the office requesting that he include somebody. And also a request that he invite one of our physicians for the National Health Program to the round table discussion.
Well, now he's been saying that this issue is off the table as far as he's concerned. Is he given a cogent reason as to why?
No, he says things like America is a big country, it's too hard to make big change like this, we're not like other countries, and you know, they're the same kinds of excuses that we hear. It's like most of the people and the healthcare providers are ready for this. It's just that the government is not responding to that.
Do you think you face, you and all of us, do you think we face insurmountable odds from the lobbyists, from the other side?
I would not say insurmountable. They're definitely huge, and it's clear, you know, Max Baucus has received a huge amount of financial support from the health insurance, pharmaceutical industry, and big business. So it's a large obstacle, but the way I view this is it's a human rights movement, just like other rights-based movements. We're fighting for every person in this country to have a right to receive health care. And we know it can be done simply through a publicly funded program that includes everyone. So like other human rights movements, it's going to happen when enough people become active and engage in acts of nonviolent civil disobedience and, you know, engage their Congress members directly and tell them that this is what we're asking them to do.
I cannot understand why most Americans do not grasp the fact that their physicians are not necessarily the ones making the decisions on their health care, that much of it's coming from insurance companies, from executives that don't know anything about medical care other than the dollars and cents of it. Do you think once people realize that maybe they'll get more involved?
I would hope so. I would hope that once people understand that the unique thing about what we have here in America is that we've allowed our health care to be privatized, so that the private health insurance industry in America is very different from the private health insurance industry in other nations, in that our health insurance industry is meant to create profit for the investors and the owners of those corporations. It's not meant to pay for and improve our health outcomes. And so that's why these decisions, which are largely made by administrators who don't have medical training, are deciding after a doctor prescribes a treatment whether the patient can receive that treatment. And it's becoming more and more blatant. So I do hope that more and more people will understand and have these discussions, understand, you know, what's happening right now.
I don't think at all unusual to find MDs that are in favor of single payer. You mentioned there's a large number. I've talked to several whom I know who are in favor of single payer. What spurs a physician to go for a single-payer system? What motivates the doctors' communities to go for this?
I mean, more and more, and I mean, we do have a poll, that a national poll that was done 2 years ago that showed that 59% of physicians nationwide want this, and that was an increase of 10% over just a five-year period. So I think the main thing for physicians is that what we have currently with this, you know, this third-party payer, this health insurance payer, is a system in which physicians are pushed to see more and more patients and not be able to spend the time with the patients that they really need to spend with them in order to deliver quality care. So it's very frustrating from the physician end to be pushed to not really be able to do what you think is, you know, the best thing. And so most of us, you know, went into practice because we actually do want to take care of patients and be able to help them. And so it causes a lot of frustration. And also on top of that, we spend a third of our time now seeking authorization, filling out paperwork, and we spend a lot of money in our offices just trying to get reimbursed from this very complicated system. So it would simplify it so that doctors can be paid fairly and quickly, and it would also allow patients and healthcare providers to make their medical decisions again and reestablish that relationship that we really want to have, you know, as patients with healthcare providers.
Let me ask a very delicate question about the physicians community. Do you know any physicians that are money motivated?
That's an interesting question. I actually have a neighbor who, when he found out that I was doing this work, said, you know, I'm probably one of the most capitalist people that you know, but I really care about my patients, and so I want to learn more about this issue. So are there physicians who enjoy the salaries that they make? Yes, I think most physicians are not. That's not their primary reason for practicing medicine.
Okay, well, that's...
But there's some out there. But.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, the oath ought to mean more than anything, I believe. And I do believe that. Can you give us a little, I should have asked you this in the very beginning when we started our conversation. Can you give us a little play-by-play of what happened yesterday exactly? Kind of create the, set the scene for us?
Sure. Well, it kind of started last week when we looked at who had been invited to this roundtable discussion, which was supposed to be an event open to the public, but at which the public was not allowed to speak. And we saw that the people invited to the table were really those who represent the health insurance industry, big business, and other groups that support their agenda. So we started by organizing the call-ins and the fax-ins and the requests to the Senate Finance Committee to allow a single payer at the table. And it came down to Monday where we were told that there would be no more invitations given and it was closed. So we decided that it was time to take the next step and to stand up. And so eight of us traveled to Washington very early in the morning so we could get in line to go to the hearing. And we had three physicians in the group who understand, you know, single-payer very well. We had other health advocates in the group. All of us work for this issue. All of us know the issue. So the first request, when the hearing was starting, one of our members stood up and said, why aren't you including single-payer at the table? We have people here right now. Will you let them have a seat at the table? And he was arrested. So we each in turn stood up and basically delivered the same message. This is what the people want. You need to include single-payer on the table. Each of us was removed and handcuffed and put in the paddy wagon and taken down to the holding area where we spent the rest of the day being processed. And that was pretty much the day.
Did they let you out on your own recognizance?
They did let us out. I don't understand these types of legal procedures very well. This is my first experience with this, but from what I understand, they did come down a little bit hard on us. We had expected that if we did get arrested, we might get off with a fine that we could pay, and instead we were given two charges, and now we have to go to court. So I'm still learning all of this, what that means.
You could end up in Leavenworth over this.
I understand we face maybe 6 months, you know, if we take it that far.
Well, I admire your courage on this. I know it took a great deal of courage. I'm sure you were nervous about it. Anybody would be. How did Mr. Baucus take all of this? What was his demeanor, and did he speak to you?
he did not speak to the squad other than to say, you know, order in the court. That was the thing that really got me, because we dressed in black, all of us, because we wanted to symbolize, which actually didn't make us stand out very much, but was meant to symbolize the fact that at least 22,000 Americans are dying every year because we don't have a health care system. And the real tragedy of that, and not just the dying, but the suffering that people go through, the stress they go through in this country when you become ill and you have no security, you don't know whether you're going to be able to afford the treatment or not. And as I looked around the room as we were, you know, sitting there waiting for the hearing to begin, what I saw in the front of the room were people who seemed to be in a position where they didn't really feel that suffering or see that suffering, and they were all very happy and chatting, and it was a great, you know, kind of a party atmosphere. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, we're talking about the future of our nation's health care, about, you know, are we going to take care of our people or not? So it was really disquieting to see that, and it was, for me, thinking about why we were there, the people that we were representing, was what allowed me to center myself and get the courage to speak up.
And so Senator Baucus really gave me a reason as to why the table was closed and you couldn't have a representative at the table.
No, he just, he said, you know, I think to the effect after we left, you know, we respect all views and I understand there's a lot of support for this issue, but we're not going there. So, you know, I think at first everybody was laughing at each of us speaking up because they didn't know how many of us there were or exactly what was going on. But then it was clear as I looked back at the video last night that he got a little bit angry about our action.
Yes, he did. He did get angry over it. Well, he has no reason to get angry over it because as a United States senator, knowing this is an important issue for all the people of the United States, my word. We're talking to Dr. Margaret Flowers, who is one of the single-payer heroes, I call him from Monday, yesterday, wasn't it?
Yesterday, yes.
Yesterday, who attended the Senate talks on the single-payer health issue in front of Chairman Max Baucus and were summarily arrested for standing up and speaking out in the chamber. Which I think is just a dirty shame. You should have been recognized. You were not a bunch of hooligans that were in there. I'm sure.
No, we came dressed very professionally. We were ready to sit at the table and speak at an equal level with the other members of the round table.
You know what we hear so many times, and if you've got just a couple of minutes, we don't often get the chance to talk to physicians on the program. We talk so much politics. If you've got a couple of minutes, you know, what we always hear is, well, don't worry about health care. People always get taken care of. You know, they complain that they don't have insurance, but they can always go to the emergency room, and there's always care for everybody in the long run. Let's say a cancer patient comes in and needs, as you probably know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of treatment. Are people likely to just absolutely deny them treatment because of money?
Yes, it happens every day. And as it stands currently, people are required, even people who are diagnosed with cancer, if they have to have surgery, are required to show that they have the financial means to pay for that surgery before they can receive it.
And so
going to the emergency room is not a solution either, because the emergency room is really just meant to stabilize and send you on. They may not address all of your problems, or they may just address your problems in a very temporary manner. So people don't, you know, they don't get their health care needs met currently.
How do you, as a physician, being put in that position that, if you're with a big healthcare group like locally where I live, one group controls all of the hospitals and the costs and all, and they're going to give orders to the doctor that no, we can't take this patient if they don't have the means to pay for our treatment. How does that make you feel as a physician?
It makes physicians feel awful. That's not what you want, and you know why you practice medicine. I actually left practice almost 2 years ago to do this full time because I felt like I needed to be able to really devote my energies to this issue. But my husband is a surgeon who sees a lot of cancer patients, and he takes every patient that he sees, you know, he takes it very personally. He wants to make them better, and it's just heartbreaking when he has to fight with insurance companies for the care that he knows is the care that that patient needs and that it can make an improvement in their life.
Has to fight with somebody on the other end that doesn't know a scalpel from all they know is the dollars and cents of it.
Exactly, and when he asks to speak to a physician, that's not an option, and that's not right.
Well, you've just pointed out in graphic terms why this is ever more important, and I certainly hope that your group remains active, and I hope that we can spur many more people on listening to this program to not let this issue sink to the bottom of the barrel, not let it off the table, as Mr. Baucus says. I think we can get it accomplished if we all just hang together on this. And
that's what it has to be, the people coming together and thinking of this as a civil rights movement and building the same grassroots momentum that we've done in the past to make these huge changes.
Well, Dr. Flowers, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program this afternoon. It's important that we get this message out. There's not enough time given to it on programs or in the press, and we know that it's imperative that we pass a single health payer system of some kind in this country. As they say, I know Baucus says that it's a huge issue and all that, and it is. But the old saying, the journey of 1,000 miles, begins with a single step. And we just haven't taken hardly any, just little baby steps. And it's time we take some leaps and bounds on this. And I admire your courage and I admire your fortitude and everybody that was in that room yesterday. And keep up the good fight. And thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you very much for having me and for your attention to this issue. And if I might just give our website really quickly, if you want to learn more, you can go to www.P as in Peter, H as in Nancy, P as in Peter. It stands for Physicians for National Health Program, and it's .org. Thank you very much.
And we'll reserve the right to get back to you as maybe this progresses further on down the line and we make some progress. Thank you again, Dr. Flowers.
Thank you. Okay, goodbye.
Bye now. Dr. Margaret Flowers, one of the single-payer heroes, I call them, from yesterday, 8 people that had the guts to go into a Senate hearing room and stand up and be heard and risk being arrested and were arrested and were and did spend the day in jail, in custody, and do face charges for speaking out for us. That just... It'd be different if these 8 people were in there speaking out for themselves. If they were in there just speaking out for a small group of people. But they were in there speaking out for all of us. With the exception of the few that say they don't need your single health payer because they've got good insurance. Well, everybody doesn't have good insurance. Not everybody has insurance, period. What is it, some 47 million do not? And you just heard a physician tell us that they have to look a patient in the eye and tell them they can't help them because of money. Look a patient in the eye and let them know that they're going to die because they don't have enough money. That's insane. Family values, that's wrong. I don't care how you cut it. I don't care how you explain it. I don't care how you rationalize it. That is wrong. It's wrong in this country. It's wrong in every country in the world. I've said many times that there's one thing that we owe each other as a civil society. It's decent health care. The last thing in the world a patient should have to worry about when they end up sick or dying or in critical condition or any kind of a medical condition, the last thing in the world they should have to think about is money. And I don't say that thinking that medical care is free. It is not. I know it costs money for the latest technology. I know it costs money to pay these highly technical people. But the obscene profits made by the insurance companies It's outrageous. How do you tell somebody? How do you tell somebody that they or their mother, their father, their child, I'm sorry I can't do any more for you because you can't pay the bills that are going to be incurred for the treatment? What does that do to you as a physician emotionally? I should think it would be devastating, and I should think it would be something you would never, ever get used to. Have more compassion for animals than that. Some of these people that speak out against single-payer health care and the government getting involved in health care wouldn't let their dogs be treated like that. You know it's true. So much money has been wasted. We're doing it so wrong in this for-profit healthcare system. And then, you know, you hear the opponents of it who are going to fight to the political death against it. So, no, we can't let the government get involved in our healthcare. Gee whiz, you know what? You can complain about the government all you want to, but I know a few things that the government's involved in. They happen to be doing one hell of a good job. I'm not saying there's no waste in any of the programs that the government's involved in. There is. But give me a break. The government takes care of our national highway system. Pretty damn good, I would say. They take care of inspecting our airplanes and the food we eat. They do a pretty damn good job of it, I think. Social Security, where would we be without it? And the opponents of that, you'll not catch them not getting their Social Security check, now will you? It's all because of money. Money. Dirty, filthy money. Profit. You know, I love a capitalistic society and a capitalistic system as much as the next person. Nobody likes it more. But there are certain issues that you cannot deny that we must help each other out with. There are certain issues that have to be put above capitalism, and this is one. And most of it can be traced back to political campaign contributions and the lobbies. It's a sad situation. It is. It's something you don't think about when you're a kid, and the older you get, and the more you get immersed in this, and the more you learn about it, and the more you learn about thousands and thousands of people dying every year because of the lack of health care, the lack of preventative medicine. So many people whose lives could have been saved if they had the money to go and see a doctor in the first place. Thousands of people die each year who could have been saved. Well, that's their fault. They couldn't afford health care. To hell with them, you know. I can't be popping everybody up. Yeah. You know, they don't have enough money to pay for health insurance. It's their own damn fault. I pay for mine. How many times have you heard that? See them with one of their kids in their arms, terribly sick, dying for the lack of medical care, be a different story, wouldn't it? I just spoke to somebody this past weekend that looked at me and was talking about this issue and said, ain't my fault. I've got health insurance. I saved my money. My wife saved her money. Our pensions are going to cover us for the rest of our lives. Our health coverage is going to go with us for the rest of our lives. Well, I got news for you. Good for you. I'm happy for that. I'm happy you're not amongst those 47 million that aren't insured. But I'm very, very sad that this country hasn't taken this issue serious enough. I'm very, very sad that back when Hillary Clinton was involved in it during the first Clinton administration, right at the beginning of it, that it got shut down, and it got shut down hard. And we've done almost nothing about it since. Oh, we're going to pay a heavy price. We're going to pay a terrible price the longer this goes on. And the fat cats sitting in the ivory towers and the insurance companies and the big medical conglomerates are going to go home fat and happy because the almighty dollar rules it all, doesn't it? Don't you hate to admit that about this country? I do. I hate to admit that the foundation that this country stands on right now is not what's right, it's not morality, it's not any of that. The very foundation under this country right now that props everything up according to these conservatives, according to these Rush publicans, everything stands on a foundation of money. That's all it comes down to. And that makes me ashamed. That makes me absolutely ashamed. When I look at the United Kingdom, I look at France, I look at Canada, and other countries around the world that do so much better than we do for their people. And yet in this country, when we talk about things like this, we hear cries of socialism, fascism, communism, all that, all the isms. And we think we're the best country on earth? Let me tell you something. As long as this problem persists in this country, as long as we have 47 million people without health care, as long as we have thousands of people dying each and every year because they couldn't get health care that they needed, we will never be the best country on this earth. Never. And it breaks my heart to say that, but it's the truth. The undeniable fact is you cannot neglect the health care of the people in your country. That is first and foremost. Safety, we have a military to protect us from invasions from foreign armies. We need to have a physician's military to protect us against not having decent health care. There's nothing more important right now. There is nothing more important. And yet we've got Senator Max Boxes saying this is off the table. Please, join me in keeping this on the table. Let's flood them. Let's tell everybody you know. You heard that interview today. You know what's going on. And you know why. Let's bomb them day and night with what we want. It's got to be that way. Well, it's news time already. Don't know where the time went today. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back right afterwards. And I expect you'll be back and maybe bring a couple people along with you. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Obama administration and the Democratic Congress have pledged to move forward with establishing a new health care system for the country, but not everyone has a seat at the table deciding what the best system should be. Jesse Russell has more.
Tuesday morning, the Senate Finance Committee held a hearing regarding the future of health care in the United States, featuring 15 witnesses. However, not a single witness was a supporter of single-payer health care. Wanting their voices to be heard, a number of doctors and advocates stood up at the start of the session and demanded a seat for single-payer at the table. And as they spoke, they were immediately escorted out of the room and arrested by Capitol Police.
It's only when the people that are living in the park and the people that are living on Park Avenue have the same health care that everybody will have high-quality health care.
The speakers who stood up were from the organizations Physicians for a National Health Program, Healthcare Now, and Single Payer Action. Senator Max Baucus of Montana is the head of the Finance Committee, and he is also the leading Democrat in the Senate to receive donations from health insurance companies. Baucus has received more than $400,000 from the companies and their employees. As the head of the committee, it was up to Baucus to bring order to the hearing.
The whole point of this hearing and other hearings is to try to determine the best route, the best option, and determining how to best reform our country's health care system.
Although he said he respected the position of single-payer advocates, he didn't offer any of the physicians in the audience a seat at the table.
The Troy Area Labor Council has become the most recent labor organization to call on the AFL-CIO to endorse a bill in the U.S. House of Representatives that would provide single-payer health care. The Troy Labor Council is the 127th Labor Council to endorse H.R. 676, the bill introduced by Representative John Conyers of Michigan. The Labor Council wants the AFL-CIO to put the endorsement up for a vote during the AFL-CIO convention in September. The California Nurses Association National Nurses Organizing Committee is joining with United American Nurses and the Massachusetts Nurses Association to form a 150,000-member nurses union. When the unions complete their merger with the National Founding Convention in December, it'll become the largest registered nurses union in U.S. history. The new nurses super union will focus on organizing non-union nurses. The new combined union will also push for comprehensive health care reform. Next week, they're working together to sponsor a national RN Day of Action in Washington, D.C. that will emphasize the nurse-to-patient ratio issue, RN union representation, and health care reform. California Nurses Association co-president Deborah Berger says the collective strength and unity of this new organization will have an enormous impact on improving the lives and workplace standards for all RNs in America and will help nurses deliver higher quality care to patients. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get calm down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
Ah,
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
There we go. Welcome back. Glad to have you with us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. Had a button turned off that I shouldn't have turned off. I'm all thumbs here today for some reason or not. The producer is not with us today. In fact, he's not with us any day. I don't know. Where is that? I guess it's because he hasn't gotten his paycheck. That must be it. He got a long way to head. We had a producer, actually, for the first 3 or 4 days of the show way back when. And when we were on local radio here, of course, we had a producer and all. But we don't have any writers. We don't have anybody doing scripting. We don't have anybody doing any directing, any producing, any of that. So, you know, that's just how it is. We do it the old-fashioned way here. Ah, yes. Thanks for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. We've got a lot more to talk about. I do appreciate Dr. Margaret Flowers taking time out of her day to be with us on the program and tell us a bit about what happened yesterday and how there are 59% of physicians in the United States who are polled that are for a single-payer health system. And she is one that, for those of you just joining us, that was arrested yesterday in the Senate hearing chamber for asking for a place at the table on this roundtable discussion they were having. They had nobody representing the single payer, the physician's corner, and all they did was ask for that, and they got arrested. Not the kind of treatment I would expect, but that's what they got. One of the things I wanted to talk about today was this, I don't know what they're calling it now, these Republicans, their listening tour, their whatever kind of a tour it is. really, it was beyond pathetic. It was dark comedy when it comes right down to it. They were Eric Cantor, the weasel, I call him, Mitt Romney, and Jeb Bush holding some kind of a town meeting at a little pizza parlor someplace. It wasn't even a big pizza parlor. It was a little one. And they made a whole lot of the fact that they were able to crowd almost 50 people into the place. And that was a very good move because they probably understood that they wouldn't be able to get much more than that number into an average size auditorium these days. Romney's so exciting, isn't he? and so is Eric Cantor and Jeb Bush. Do you suppose the old Jebster's going to give it a run? Hmm? Yes, Lauder J, you are exactly right. Yeah, that's what it is. That's a private joke. But Romney was actually comparing the Democrats to the American revolutionaries of back in the 18th century. He said that the Democrats were more like the English monarchy that ruled that area, and the irony of it all was that as he was saying that the Democrats resembled the English monarchy that ruled back in the 18th century, here he was sitting next to a man who was the son of one president and the brother of another and the descendant of another one, Franklin Pierce, I believe it was. I think poor old Mitt's irony meter needs some adjusting, if you ask me. And it really and truly, it was just another attempt to remake the image of the GOP, and it didn't work. It did look pathetic, and nobody's buying their product anymore. It reminded me of a guy I used to know who didn't want to give up selling CB radios. He had a CB radio store. And let's face it, I know a few people still use CB radios, but after cell phones came out, that business pretty much died. And he wasn't going to give up on it, and because it was very successful for a while. And he just hung on and hung on and hung on. And he carried on for several years and eventually went bankrupt. Blamed it all on all sorts of things, but the main thing was he just wasn't with it anymore. And come to think of it, that's really exactly what's happening at this very moment with the Republican Party. And when I watch this, I think I understand it all very well. What was the purpose of this so-called pizza party, you ask? Well, so far, no one's quite been able to figure that out or articulate it, and they spent a lot of time preaching the ideas of the Republican Party without being able to define just what those ideas were. And we've seen a lot of that coming from the Republican Party lately, and that's been pretty much the case with all of their public venues lately. And whenever some sort of a relevant question managed to cut through the spin and the smoke and the mirrors that they put forth, their responses always seem like the dog ate my homework kind of variety. Amusing. And the fact is that they have no good answers to the questions and that we could put to them any old time. If they would stand before us and let us ask a question and not have these staged little deals like they have here, just have all of us come and stand there and let us ask the questions. And, you know, you would ask, what about the economy? And like always, right on cue, they say, well, we've got a plan. Well, yeah, okay, you got a plan. I got that. Explain your plan. Well, we have a plan. And what would your plan entail? Well, we've got a plan. And so if you would have been able to get a hold of that little pamphlet that Boehner was showing everybody up on Capitol Hill and Mitch McConnell and all that, say, hey, we got a plan. And so you look at that and say, wait a minute, there's no numbers in this plan. Well, we've got a plan. And you finally, you know, you finally bring forth to the, you guys don't have a clue what you're talking about. Yeah, well, we've got a plan. You get the idea. What they're trying to do is do something my dad always used to bring up. What they're trying to do is to tie a pair of antlers to a pig and call it an elk. And it's beyond funny. I mean, it's really funny. You got your snake oil salesman that's only going to be able to sell his worthless concoction for so long before the people catch on to the scam. And what really happens is he'll just relabel the bottles and call it cleaning fluid. You know, the American people have been swallowing that worthless right-wing magic elixir for almost 30 years, and it hasn't cured their ills. It's only made them sicker. And so we get Republican doctors here, Cantor and Romney and Bush, they're desperately trying to change their Republican bottle label here. And fortunately for us, very unfortunately for them, the people have gotten wise to the swindle and they aren't buying the product anymore. Not only that, they really should stop claiming that they're the party of ideas. No one believes that anymore. It's ludicrous. They don't even believe that. They're the party of obsolete ideology. And while we're on that subject, will you please, 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 oh please, cease and desist of using the name Jesus Christ as proof of your so-called moral superiority over the rest of us. I don't claim to be a religious scholar, but my Methodist upbringing has given me, at the very least, a remedial understanding of what Jesus was and is all about. And when he said, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth," I have a funny feeling he wasn't talking about Rush Limbaugh or Ann Coulter or Cantor or Romney or Bush, and, you know, give that a rest, will you please? Please give that a rest. They just can't communicate anymore, man, but it's just not really a question of failing to communicate. After all, the patron saint of the party was called the Great Communicator. The problem is that for so long, they were able to communicate a whole range of perfectly screwy ideas that the electorate, for reasons I'll never understand, took seriously. You think back at some of the things that St. Ronnie had where the trickle-down economy. But that old dog isn't going to hunt anymore. Abe Lincoln's the first one to say that. And the people aren't going to buy their snake oil anymore, their magic elixir. Party's over for that. And I really believe that right now it appears this is going to be the end of the line for the wacky right wing. I'm not saying for the Republicans, but the nutcase group that are out there on the right, the Gingriches and all those people, the Eric Cantors and the Boners and all those people. I don't think the moderate wing of the party is going to be able to save it. Arlen Specter and Jim Jeffords are now Democrats. Jack Kemp and Barry Goldwater are dead. And yes, somebody sent me an email about it. The party has moved so far to the right that Goldwater is viewed as a centrist. As somebody said to me recently, it's not a party anymore, it's a cult. And while I couldn't be happier over the complete implosion of what used to be known as the Party of Lincoln, I always thought that was ludicrous. My joy over the whole matter is tempered by the knowledge that one-party rule can ultimately lead to disaster. And so you say to a Democrat like me, will absolute power corrupt the Democrats? Absolutely it will. But once again, it's up to you and it's up to me. We have to watch this very, very carefully. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the program today. We are going to take a moment out for Media Matters Minute, and we'll be right back.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Conservative media figures are advancing disputed allegations that President Obama's auto czar, Stephen Ratner, threatened to ruin hedge fund leaders that oppose the administration's plan to handle the Chrysler bankruptcy.
Thomas Loria, he says that Stephen Ratner and the Carzar were bullying them to take the deal.
Yeah, well, move over Tony Soprano. I mean, this is a bare-knuckle tactics at the very least.
However, what some failed to report is that both the Obama administration and the investment firm that allegedly came under pressure have denied that any such allegations are true. But the most outrageous comment on this topic goes to conservative leader Rush Limbaugh.
Obama loves the fact that two things are happening. He loves the fact that they're getting death threats. Literally a thugocracy operating out of the White House.
For these stories and more, follow our updates on Twitter at MMFA or visit us at MediaMatters.org.
Got to be driving Limbaugh absolutely crazy that the ratings for Obama are still sky high. And as long as he's trying hard for the American people, I believe they'll stay up there. He won't have success in everything he tries, but he'll be right up there. And speaking of Rush Limbaugh, I got this email from a cyber friend named Roger. And he asked if I would read it, and I believe I will. It's a little bit lengthy. But since Limbaugh spoke up, and by the way, did you hear Limbaugh speaking in front of the Heritage, I believe it was Heritage Foundation the other night? There was some audio smuggled out of it that obviously somebody took on a cell phone or something. They recorded. It was horrible audio. I was going to try and play it on the show today, but it's not broadcast quality. But you could understand it if you turned up the volume enough and listened to it about how he was bragging about his $40 million contract and how he's never had a bad year and you know, people just got to want it and they'll get it and all this. It was so outrageous that I can't imagine how a bunch of billionaires could sit there and listen to such drivel coming out of that man's mouth. He is so disgusting. And so Roger sends me this email, and I wanted to wanted to pass it on to you. So who runs the Rush Republican Party? The pedophile dope addict from Florida or the white trash money-grubbing racist petty tyrant from Alaska? Which one? I believe, given all the groveling done at his feet, that the dope addict is in charge, but I also believe, as I've mentioned many times before, that Caribou Barbie is looking for some way to keep her inbred racist base, but she's also looking for ways to make herself palatable to a broader swath of America. She's stupid, she's greedy, and she's an attention whore, but nobody has more ambition. Caribou Barbie is trying to invent her 2012 persona in 2009. Did Rush dream up Caribou Barbie's latest move and then tell it to do? Or did Caribou Barbie and Rush figure it out during one of his lucid moments? Or did Caribou Barbie decide to make this move to show the dope addict who is really in charge? I honestly can't say that I know what's going on, although I think we can all agree that Caribou Barbie's endgame is still what it has been since the day she found out what kind of a free ride you can take with the National Rush Publican establishment behind you. A few hours after Rush Limbaugh told listeners, GOP listeners, launching a Republican rebranding effort, hated and feared Sarah Palin, House Minority Whip Eric Cantor announced that the Alaska governor had finally accepted an invitation to join the group. On a conference call last week for the National Council for a New America, former Republican presidential candidate John McCain said that he thought his running mate would probably be part of the effort as well, but there has been no immediate confirmation by her office. The two groups of key Palin aides, those in the governor's office in Alaska and at her Virginia-based Political Action Committee, Sarah PAC, have often given very different messages on her participation with various groups. Congressional leaders and conservative activists have both announced Palin planned attendance at major events this year after receiving assurances from one set of advisors, only to learn later from other aides that she hadn't yet made a decision. The governor's decision to join the NCNA's panel of experts was confirmed Monday by spokeswoman Meg Stapleton. At the group's kickoff event, a town hall-style gathering at an Arlington, Virginia restaurant, Cantor, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney urged the party to reframe their message, but in particular expressed admiration for President Obama's political skill and told the crowd not to get mired in nostalgia for past GOP dominance. He mentioned no names, but Limbaugh interpreted that remark as a knock on Palin and President Ronald Reagan. Something else you have to understand is these people hate Palin too, the conservative radio host said Monday. They despise Sarah Palin. They fear Sarah Palin, and they don't like her either. She's, according to them, she's embarrassing. McCain said, "I was there with Ronald Reagan. No Reagan voter ever believed McCain was a Reaganite." And I think a lot of this is aimed, as says Limbaugh, at Sarah Palin. When you strip all the talk, it's the Reagan era is over. Stop all the nostalgia and stuff. Clearly, in last year's campaign, the most prominent, articulate voice for standard, run-of-the-mill, good old-fashioned American conservatism was Sarah Palin. Now, everybody on this Speak to America tour has presidential perspirations. Mitt Romney there, he wants to be president again. Jeb may someday. Eric Cantor, some of the others. McCain, I don't think he does, but you never know. So this is an early campaign event, a 2012 presidential campaign, primary campaign, with everybody there but Sarah Palin. Well, the words of Rush Limbaugh there, Roger goes on to say, I say you'd have to be high on something to conclude that the latest farcical attempts on the Rush Republican Party to remake its image has a damn thing to do with Sarah Palin. But a successful remake excludes Palin and the pedophile dope addict himself by default. He might be onto something after all. Stay tuned while the crazy calamity clowns continue to load up for their circular firing squads. At least Rush has painkillers to blunt the effect of the bullets. Well, thank you, Roger. Good to hear from you once again. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us here in the program, 866-546-5254. A sad side note today. I see one of my favorite characters, Dom DeLuise, died at the age of 75. Dom was a funny, funny guy. Appeared in lots of movies and TV shows. Lovable, laughable. He was a funny guy. Dom DeLuise, dead at age of 75. And for all of you tuned in now that we're here at the beginning of the show, if you want to get yourself a good laugh, go over to amptoons.com/blog, amptoons.com/blog. I got something pretty doggone funny on there right now that I think you'll enjoy. It's about the Hallelujah Chorus. I think you'll find it amusing. I sure did. Up in Ohio from here, I'm supposed to say, George Voinovich is going to retire, and after this term is up, and they're saying Mr. Rob Portman from Columbus or Westerville area is going to run for the Republican nomination for the Senate there, and the polls are saying that he will lose to any Democrat running against him. Now, that's good news. We'll have Sherrod Brown and any Democrat. All the Democrat candidates will have to do is to run the ads and pictures of abandoned factories that have shut down in Ohio, and then show a picture of Rob Portman. He was Bush's trade guy, the guy that helped ship those good-paying jobs overseas, and that's all they'll have to do, as far as I could see. 866-546-5254. We're going to take a break for a moment, and we'll be back shortly.
She takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day, slipping into stockings, stepping into shoes, dipping in the pocket of her raincoat. It's just another day at the office where the papers grow. She takes a break, drinks another coffee, and she finds it hard to stay awake. It's just another day. It's just another day. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Happy music. We're happy, happy, happy here at the Guy James Show today. I hope you're happy wherever you are. I'm having a good day today, feeling good. I'm going to have to find that Rush Limbaugh audio I was talking about. I think, let me check here. Let me check. I'm thinking I saw it over at the Progress Report. Let me see here. I think that's where it was. Let me see. Maybe not. Well, anyway, we'll look for it and we'll get it to you. Here you go. It's on the Progress Report. You have to scroll down just a little ways. The audio is on there. It's a nasty condition, but you can hear him belittling people. Anybody but Rush is belittled on there. So I don't know. It's 5 or 6 or 7 stories down from the top on the Progress Report today. Love that site. Think Progress. Think Progress. ThinkProgress.org. That's what it is, actually. So scroll down for, 6, 7 stories on there, maybe more, and it's there. ThinkProgress.org, a great website, by the way. If you don't visit it every day, you ought to. 866-546-5254. Hey, how'd you like to be slinging hamburgers and making French fries at the local Greasy Spoon, and all of a sudden Barack Obama and Joe Biden walk in for lunch? Did you see that yesterday, what they did? They took a ride over to, I believe, in Alexandria, Virginia, and went to some hamburger joint over there that's fairly famous for great hamburgers, and went in and ordered a basic cheddar cheeseburger, medium well. Him and Joe went in. They had a hankering for some meat, so they Ray's Hell Burger in Arlington, Virginia. A motorcade. How much do those hamburgers cost us, I wonder? Took a motorcade over to Ray's Hell Burger in Arlington, Virginia. I think that, taking a motorcade over there probably cost us $25,000 for them. Since they didn't call ahead to place their orders, Obama and Biden, they went right up to the counter and decided what they wanted and waited in line like everybody else for their number to be called. And when their lunch was ready, the president and vice president paid in cash and took a seat to enjoy the burgers. It says on this note, a standard fare at Ray's Hell Burgers, which sits in a strip mall, is the premium-aged 10-ounce hamburger that sells for $6.95. Well, that sounds pretty good right now. I'm always hungry this time of day, this part of the show. And then we got Sophie on there having pizza. Shame on you, Sophie. That does make me hungry. on the chat room I'm talking about. And all of you listening that have not visited the Head On Radio Network chat room, do yourself a favor and go on over there. You can meet some mighty fine folks in the Head On Radio Network's chat room. Very politically astute, up on all the issues. Some of them are up on just everything. I don't know how they do it. And I see the Bank of America has passed the stress test. How do you say that a bank is needs $34 billion in capital, but they passed the stress test that they were talking about from the Department of the Treasury? I mean, just crank up those printing presses and toss them another 34 bill. Just chump change. Yes, the Bank of America has been deemed to need as much as $34 billion in additional capital, according to the results of this government stress test. Wow. $34 billion, but they passed the stress test. I don't quite understand that one. Whatever a stress test for a bank, whatever that is. And I am very disappointed to see that Eric Holder has evidently decided not to prosecute the interrogation memo lawyers. I don't understand that. the government lawyers who wrote the memos during the Bush administration that, you know the story, they authorized the enhanced interrogation techniques that were used against the detainees. They're going to avoid penalties themselves, evidently. According to an internal Justice Department draft report, the two lawyers who no longer work for the federal government will not face criminal prosecution, although it's recommended they be disciplined by state bar associations. Big deal. This was the only review conducted of interrogation memos that the Obama White House contends allowed methods that occasionally cross the line into torture. The two lawyers have been identified, and you all know their names, California law professor John Yoo and Jay Bybee, a federal appeals judge in Nevada. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder plans a final review of the recommendations made out by the Justice Department Office of Professional Responsibility in the next few weeks. Oh, man. Hey, folks, just go do whatever you want. Just do whatever you want. Elo, it's always got a comment. She said that audio of Limbaugh is really bad. It sounds fun, like it was taped in Larry Craig's bathroom. She needs to go on stage. She could do some stand-up there. That's funny. Oh, yeah. It's not funny to me that John Yoo and Jay Bybee are going to get off pretty much scot-free. It bothers me. And here we go again. And we have all the Iraqi people that love us now because we killed half of them. And now in Afghanistan, we killed about somewhere between 70 and 100 civilians on a bombing raid the other day. Oh, man. You know, we give them our apologies. How well would we take that in this country? Let's somebody flies over, let's say, Hayes, Kansas, for example. It's out in western Kansas, out in the prairie. And they fly over there and just bomb downtown Hayes, Kansas. Or Dayton, Wyoming, or, you know, any place like that. And kill 70 to 100 Americans, huh? Let's say it's the Canadian Air Force that comes over and does that. And they kill 70 to 100 Americans. How are we going to take that? Are we going to have, you know, the government's going to say, man, we're really sorry. We're really sorry we did that. We feel bad that we did that. Is that going to be enough for the Americans? You know it isn't. We're going to be wanting to go kill a bunch of people. And that's exactly what's going to result from another horrible error of our military in a place that we don't belong with a large military force. I'm no tactician, but I believe I'm smart enough to know, and I've heard many other people who are military tacticians who are smart enough to know, that the only way for us to go in there and root out the Taliban or the Osama bin Ladens or whoever they're after now is with small groups of, you know, secret small groups to go in after them, not with a big military. I don't know. But I'm sorry to hear that once again we're having to apologize for a massive civilian kill. It's just not something that is palatable to me and to most Americans. It's not something that we like, and we do regret it. And speaking of violence, I see Israel is rattling their nukes again. And they're talking about bombing the nuclear facilities in Iran. I believe that if Israel used nuclear weapons against any Muslim nation, that they will end up being a pariah state forevermore. The use of nuclear weapons in such a specific case would be And I don't care how you cut it. It would be a criminal act of the highest order, and it would be a huge mistake. It would unite the Muslim world in a irreversible, because these people have long memories. It would be irreversible opposition to Israel's, even their existence. The possibility of Israel's long-term survival in that part of the world would end up being zero. And I don't think this is a value judgment on my part. It's a simple statement of fact. The Muslim world would not tolerate Israel's existence any longer, and such an act would without question galvanize the entire Muslim world against Israel. Countries like Turkey, who've had relations with it, they would drop out, and then it would only be a matter of time before the end game. You know, you think about that whole situation. Egypt and Jordan, they couldn't withstand the domestic opposition inside their own countries for very long, because they've got somewhat normalized relations with Israel. We'd have the wars of the 60s all over again. Oh, boy. So here we've got an Israeli over here trying to, they're talking about it, and I understand why he's doing it. He's trying to force Obama's hand, and he's no doubt feeling the heat from Clinton and Emmanuel. And I don't doubt that there's no other way to achieve the tactical aim of eliminating the Iranian nuclear facilities, but I just think, in my opinion, it'd be an error of colossal strategic idiocy to go through with it. You want to see the Muslim streets and the Muslim moderates hyper-radicalized? You want to see them dancing in the street? Hell, if Israel used nukes in any scenario, other than to ensure its immediate short-term survival, in essence, if it were being attacked by all its neighbors at once, as it has been in the past. Man. They would deserve pariah status if they did this. No state, no nation, no people on this planet deserves to exist if they were to use nuclear weapons outside the circumstances of some sort of imminent military statewide defeat. Self-defense is not a universal moral justification for that. So I hope none of that happens. I do believe the use of nuclear weapons in any scenario other than the imminent collapse of the state of Israel or any other nation, I think it's totally unacceptable. And Obama and Secretary of State Clinton should make that very, very, very clear to Israel. Very clear. I don't know why, I don't know how we could back anything like that. I just don't know how we could. My opinion, we could not morally back anything like that at all. You know, we had this talk yesterday about the credit cards from Senator Saunders. I understand his office is listening today, and I thank them for that. I thank them for arranging the interview yesterday with Senator Bernie Sanders. He mentioned his website yesterday, Bernie Sanders, saunders.senate.gov, and these stories about the credit cards. And it's some great reading if you want to go over and see what these credit card companies are really doing, and I know many of you are, but I looked up some of the things on that website to give you some examples that he's of the things people have written in to complain about the credit card companies, and here's a couple of them. And these are from people who wrote into his website and posted their problem. I owned and operated a summer business in excess of 43 years. My business credit card was with Avanta at 7.9% for years. Last year, my payment jumped to about $400 a month. I thought there was fraud involved. Upon checking, I found my interest had been raised from 7.9% to 28.8%. I always paid more than the minimum, and always on time, and when Ivanta was contacted and asked why, I was told it's a floating interest. I asked to speak to a manager and was advised that's the way it was, and they could do nothing to lower it. I got a line of credit loan from Heritage Credit Union at 1% over prime and paid them off and shut down my business. After 43 years of business, it took usury to shut me down. I am 75 years old and a vet. Go get 'em, Bernie. It's time we had honesty in the banking system. Another one here. Let's see. I was seriously injured as a result of a physical assault in 2007. Workers' comp was denied, so began an almost two-year battle to get a very poor settlement because of no witnesses. I awaited that and the disability approval from SSDI. In the meantime, I was covering food, fuel, gas expenses with two credit cards I had. I had never defaulted on any credit card before, and I called the both companies about my job loss and inability to work. They responded by asking for a minimum payment of $400 to $600 and closed my accounts to further charges. I explained that I could not pay what they were asking me at the time. Then they raised my interest rates to 28.99. That goes back to Harry Truman, the old saying, bankers, there's a bunch of SOBs. They charge you more of something they know that you don't have. Just what happened right there. Raised his interest to $28.99 when he told him he couldn't pay. They were about making the most money possible at my expense. My credit has been ruined, and I am looking at bankruptcy because I cannot catch up. Oh, they did offer to settle for two installments of $7,000 if I paid in 2 months. How could I do that when I couldn't pay the minimum payments? Let's find another one here. I've been on time every month, and one day I got my statement, and wow, my interest rate had more than doubled. I called, and they did put it back to the rate I had and said it would be good for only 9 months, and then they would up it again, and I would have to call again. This is hard for families who aren't using their credit cards anymore, and they're on a budget factor in the credit card payment, and then all of a sudden 1 month it's gone up a lot, and you didn't factor that in. It's on and on and on, and that is on Bernie Sanders' website. Here's one here. My husband sustained a severe brain trauma in 2000. We managed to not file bankruptcy and to pay off all credit cards. I now find that we were idiots to do this. Our credit is ruined by going a year without income, ruined because we paid any credit card debt we owed, but because the accounts were in collection, the collection agencies never report back, and the banks continually sell these accounts over and over and over again. All accounts paid cycle back into collection, and we will never have credit again. We cannot get a loan without paying huge interest rates, yet we paid everything and did not file bankruptcy. Yet the crooks on Wall Street, they knew exactly what they were doing, got bailed out. Where's my bailout? Well, these go on and on and on. Abuses by credit card companies, transaction fees. And here's one. My account with GE Money Bank covers the much-needed new roof after two hurricanes in Central Florida. I got together a large payment to help bring down the balance, and after sending $2,000, was astounded to find that I was charged a $50 transaction fee. I found in the fine print that this was probably legal, but it's certainly not just. Well, usury, usury, usury. That word gets used over and over and over again. Let's pause for a break, and we'll come back in just a minute or two, okay? We'll be right back.
Hey, welcome back. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Yes, indeed. And stay tuned for Mark Levine coming up next and Bob Kincaid after that. Hey, Bob and I are looking very much forward to heading to Washington, D.C. I think it's June 1st for the Campaign for American Future convention this year. It's going to be a good time had by all. And, of course, we will be bringing to you our shows during that time. And we look forward to it. Bob and I are, I don't know, we're going to go out and hit the town, you know, being the wild guys that we are. But we are looking forward to it, and it's going to be great. I had an email sent to me. Let me see here if I can find that right now. Somebody asked a little bit about Michael Savage earlier. Of course, Edo being right on the, or Sophie actually did this, right on the ball here. Michael Savage was born Michael Allen Wiener to a Jewish father of Russian origins and a Roman Catholic mother of Italian descent living in the Bronx. He described his childhood as difficult due to his father's gruff and profane personality. There's a pot calling the kettle black. After graduating from Jamaica High School, Savage attended Queens College, where he earned a bachelor's degree in education and sociology. And after college, Savage taught high school for several years. My God, can you imagine having him as a teacher? His first marriage to Carol Ely in 1964 ended in divorce, and he remarried after meeting his current wife, Janet, in 1967. His first wife says that she became pregnant twice and aborted both pregnancies. During this time, Savage also worked for the famous psychedelic drug advocate, I knew it, Timothy Leary, as keeper of the Stone Gatehouse on Leary's Millbrook estate. Leary hired him to the post because Savage did not use LSD himself. Savage then earned two master's degrees in ethnobotany and anthropology from the University of Hawaii, and he obtained a Ph.D. in 1978 from the University of California, Berkeley, in nutritional ethnomedicine. His thesis was entitled Nutritional Ethnomedicine in Fiji. All right. Well, there's the whole story. He became fascinated with the 19th century sailor Charles Savage, who was believed to be the first man to bring firearms to Fiji. So Savage and his second wife have two children, a daughter and a son. His son Russell is the founder of the company that produces the Rockstar energy drink, where Janet serves as chief financial officer. And, of course, he has had a change in philosophy over the years. He introduced himself to certain writers in the North Beach area of San Francisco in the early 70s. He befriended and traveled with beat poets, Allen Ginsberg. Stephen Schwartz, also an acquaintance of Savage from this time, reported Savage possessed a photograph of himself and Ginsberg swimming naked in Hawaii and used the photograph as kind of a calling card. My, this is not the Michael Savage we know of today, is it? No. And he said he endured Ginsberg's public image. One of the postcards he sent to Ginsberg mentioned his desire to photograph Ginsberg in a provocative way. Uh-huh. All right. I see. Savage dreamed of becoming a stand-up comic in the mold of Lenny Bruce. On his radio show, Savage confirmed his desire, but compared this with his desire as a child to become a cowboy. Well, oh, yes. That's enough said about Michael Wiener. Savage, whatever his name is. Thanks for joining us today here on the Guy James Show. Always a great pleasure to have all of you along with us. Appreciate it very, very much. And we will join you again tomorrow. Don't forget, we're part of the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for Mark Levine and later on Bob Kincaid. And we'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, here on the Guy James Show, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang. Thank you.
of violence that is a felony under state law and is motivated by prejudice based on the actual or perceived race, color, religion, national origin, gender, sexual orientation, gender, identity, or disability of the victim. The bill has been around Congress for a very long time, but this time it's passed the House and has a decent chance to pass the Senate. My guest today opposes this legislation. His name is Pastor Bill Keller. He's the founder of